that's all going to be edited out.
Welcome to Animation Station, episode 4.
Episode 4, where we watch and review Paprika, Satoshi Kon's 2006 anime dream psychological thriller, noir, whatever.
Whatever you want, there's a number of descriptors that apply to it.
It wears a great many hats.
Yes. So
we decided to review this one because we both have an immense love for Satoshi Kon's work. He's like a lesser known, not so much lesser known, like he doesn't get as much of the press that, say like Hayao Miyazaki would. For Miyazaki, he's basically the Japanese Walt Disney. Satoshi Kon's more like the Japanese Chuck Jones, I guess,
I can't make these analogies.
I shouldn't say that because Chuck Jones doesn't really do a whole lot of dark, psychological, like, thriller things that are about death and stuff.
Right. Well, so he's a little lesser known. He's also...
Still,
he was
just
also,
high quality work.
Yeah, and also was unfortunately shorter lived than Hayao Miyazaki.
Yes. Unfortunately, he passed away in 2008, I believe, from pancreatic cancer.
2008?
Yeah. It was 2008 or 2010.
It was unfortunately recently, and it was unfortunate.
Which made me very sad.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh. I think he's probably my favorite outside of Hayao Miyazaki. Actually, I think some of his, Satoshi Kon's work stays with me a little bit more than Miyazaki's work does. But.
Yeah, there's definitely, I mean.
He takes, if you're really into, like, movies that more examine, psychology, or, like a little bit like darker material.
Yeah, it's definitely like.
Oh no,
movies
he's like Christopher
more...
Nolan. Duh, like that's a perfect analogy because Christopher Nolan.
Yeah, Christopher Nolan
ended up using a lot of material to make Inception.
Yes, from Paprika specifically.
Yes.
Paprika, as we said, is sort of a psychological movie about dreams, and I guess somewhat the power and danger of dreams and. Things like this.
Things you can accomplish in the dream world, things that you can't, and how you keep your grasp on reality when you have to keep swapping in between two different worlds.
Right, exactly, which are, again, are themes that we see in, clearly mirrored in Inception.
Yeah.
So, basically, Paprika is a movie in which they have, this doctor, Tokita, has created a machine that allows you to essentially plug into someone's head and be able to view their dreams.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's some... I guess there's some people... I'm not sure. It's not super clear. But I think there's some people who have a greater grasp of control over dreams, maybe?
I think what it does is that, like, it records your dreams so that therapists can then go in to analyze it. Or if they need to, like, get a greater understanding of what a person is going through, then they can directly look at the dreams, try to make something of the imagery, or... figure out if there's like a hidden meaning behind what they're thinking or what's really going on in their lives.
Right, exactly. But there's some, I mean, what I'm saying is like there's clearly something like both Paprika, the title character, and the character who ends up being the antagonist kind of reveal that they have some level of control over things happening in the dream,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to like a character who's just in the dream and experiencing the dream.
I think it might be relative to their grounding in what their actual reality is. Because the character that's the, Paprika is this dual persona of, she's the dream version of this therapist named Dr. Chiba, who, she's very stoic and very serious, but she's also very dedicated to her work, and she has a very clear understanding about what the actual process of the DCMNE involves. She doesn't know she doesn't know a whole lot about the actual circuitry or the making of it.
But she understands the machine and, in the essence of what it does.
Yes. So, as Paprika, she goes in and helps other, she assists a detective named Konakawa in trying to figure out his own issues with what's going on. And in turn, he's trying to help her figure out who ended up taking the DC minis.
Right, yeah, because early on it's revealed that 3 DC minis have gone missing, and they're afraid because obviously being able to enter and access someone's dreams...
could be very dangerous.
Yeah.
So, because it, not just in terms of information, but it all, it can also affect what goes on in real life. Wherein if something ends up happening to you in a dream and it really messes you up, you could end up in a coma.
Right, exactly. So, and it's revealed, and so, obviously this happens with the missing Ysimenes. People's minds are in some way messed with, and so they start, like, acting out in really strange ways.
Like, spouting nonsensical gibberish.
Right,
yeah.
Right, mimicking the symptoms of aphasia.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a disorder wherein there's some kind of disconnect between, like, your brain and your mouth, essentially.
Yeah.
Where you're trying to say one thing, but the words that come out are different, and even though you know what you're saying, and you don't understand why no one else understands it.
And this ends up happening to a lot of people that haven't even equipped or handled the DC mini before, just, like, passersby on the street.
Well, yeah,
but it's happening
later
in a dream
movie,
also. So, presumably, it's part of the delusions of the person that's who's having the dream.
Right. So
if you can't see the Inception parallels at this point, then we can't help you.
Maybe you just haven't watched the movie.
Yeah. Really? What have you been doing? I don't know. No, it's okay.
Right, but so increasingly as the movie goes on, there is the border between dream and reality kind of fades, I guess.
Yeah. Well, they merge into one.
Until the end of the movie. By the end of the movie, you know, there is no barrier.
Yeah. Well, and, like, Paprika, the actual character of Paprika ends up using this literally where she can leap into, like, a TV or a billboard and manipulate or otherwise handle the anything else that's on there. So, like, say if there's a horse racing poster, she can leap.
Yeah,
she
literally
leap into
does
the poster
that.
And
she
start
stands
riding the horse.
Next to it and starts riding the horse
yep.
away.
Yep.
Like, there were a lot of super neat cuts using that.
And it makes an amazing opening sequence.
Yeah,
where
yeah.
It gives you an exact feeling for what you're going to be experiencing.
Yeah, yeah.
So.
My favorite one is when they go through the television and they come out of the guy's camera.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
the old man gets
just seeing
stuck.
Crazy eyes coming through the, yeah. going through the camera, and the, like, cameraman's like, oh, okay.
Yeah, they're all terrified.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But this movie is a hard R, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
I should probably mention that it's not. There's not really a lot of language, but there's a lot of violence, and there's a lot of adult kind of situations.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So,
and a fairly
some fairly graphic parts of it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. A fairly intense and very uncomfortable, almost rape scene.
Yeah, to say that it definitely uses the medium of animation is an understatement.
Yeah, no,
but,
absolutely.
But it's very vivid and it's very disturbing, so please keep that in mind if you end up watching the movie. I would highly recommend, if you're going to be watching it with someone, make sure they're at least a mature teenager, or just watch it with your adult friends.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, actual grown adult friends. Yeah, so it's such an interesting film, though, because it feels like it breezes by, but you don't really get a chance to kind of just sit and figure out, like, well, wait, what's going on? It makes you an active participant, which I really like.
Yeah, yeah. Well, like, I was thinking about, like, we did, so,
we
the last one we did was The Last Unicorn.
Yeah.
Which had super slow pacing, and then previously we did Cats Don't Dance. It actually has, like, I think probably decent pacing,
mm-hmm.
but is a short movie.
Yeah, that one barely clocks in at 80 minutes.
Yeah, right.
So.
Whereas this is a regular, like, full-length 90-minute movie,
mm-hmm.
and it feels very quick.
It
or
does.
At least it did. I don't know. I felt like it didn't feel like it moved as fast the first time I watched it, but when we were watching it last night.
Well, I think
it just flew for me. Like, I was just like, whoa.
Well, I think the reason that I, the first time that I saw it was in college. I actually had to watch it for a class.
Right.
And what struck me about it was that the pacing of the movie is made in that we discover everything immediately once the characters figure it out.
Right.
So
yeah,
if they're in a life-threatening
never...
situation, there's not like that whole warning thing of like, oh, they're foreshadowing that one guy looked at her weird, and now he's back at the thing. And,
right,
like,
no.
We don't really get that. It's just, like, everything is just, like, you are with them the entire time, and you really don't know what's going to happen.
Right, yeah.
And it's very frightening, because there's no semblance of control for any of the characters, and we were like, we just have to watch. Like, because if they end up getting hurt, there's nothing, you know,
yeah.
that anyone can really do, especially in the dream world, so.
Yeah, so it's pretty interesting, isn't it? It has really good pacing in that way.
Mm-hmm.
And I do... Yeah, I like that we don't see, like, these sort of foreshadowings, and we don't have that,
Not really. I mean, like, well, when you... Well, like, later when it gets into the movie, it's like, oh, that's what that thing was.
Yeah, right.
Where it's like, then you start discovering things like an infector.
Right.
So...
What's the... there's a word for that, like dramatic irony, where like the crowd, the audience knows something that the characters don't. Like that doesn't really exist in this movie.
I think it's dramatic irony.
Yeah,
but I know what you're referring to, but I don't know the actual term for it.
Sure,
I can go on TV tropes.
People.
But yeah, so it's I think the part of the movie that sticks out the most for me is just how much you appreciate the visuals that go into it, especially
yeah.
like, between like the parade. All the transitions, all the other references they make to other films, the clear appreciation for Hollywood.
Mm-hmm.
It's just really interesting. I don't know, I like the, they have really well-established, scenes. Like, there's one quieter part of the movie is where Paprika and Konakawa meet up at a bar. Like, it's, he types in this URL that's, www.radioclub.jp,
mm-hmm.
and, he... Once he enters it into his computer, he can actually go in and interact in the bar, where there's a bartender and a waiter, and Paprika is there waiting for him, where they talk
mm-hmm.
about how far they've gotten with the DC Mini, or what the actual ramifications are of
right.
using it. So.
Right. And I actually also love that. Like, I love that. I just love that bar thing. Like,
yeah.
it's the thing he keeps going back to.
Mm-hmm.
So it had, like, a sort of comfortable familiarity
yeah.
feel to it, at least for me. And then, that's also fun because the two bartenders are voiced, in the Japanese version, obviously, are voiced by the author of the book this is based on, and Satoshi Kon himself.
Yeah. The author of the book voiced the waiter that had the mustache, and the bartender was voiced by the director, Satoshi Kon.
Mm-hmm.
So, which is really cool.
Yeah.
He kind of fanboyed out when he was just like, he was like, I was so nervous, I didn't want to do anything to screw it up.
Yeah.
So.
I love
that,
though, whenever directors have, like, little bit parts in their movies.
Mm-hmm.
Like the like when that's the dance Max.
Yeah, with Mark Bindle as Max. So,
mm-hmm.
I don't know, what else should we get into? That's some of the imagery. How about let's talk about the soundtrack. I think that's what
yeah,
that's one thing
neat.
That really makes the movie, and it was part of a larger partnership that he had with Hirasawa Susumu. I think that's his name.
Yeah, I think that's the name.
Yeah,
yeah
I'm pretty sure that is. I think he's a. Either
composer.
A pop, yeah, he's a composer slash pop music artist.
Yeah. But this soundtrack on this was, I think, the first soundtrack to be done using a Vocaloid.
Yeah.
Specifically the Vocaloid Lola. So, like, all the songs you hear and his vocals are done by a Vocaloid, which is kind of
yeah,
neat.
Which is pretty cool.
And very well done. Like, it fit.
Mm-hmm.
It kind of has a weird feeling. It fits the movie.
Yeah. The opening title sequence song is a very kind of ethereal,
yeah.
like poppy form to it, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. Well,
yeah,
yeah I agree. Which fits the theme of the movie, which, like, even though it sort of deals with these darker themes, it's much more brighter and hopeful than some of his other film
yes.
work. Like,
yeah.
Like, I really love Paranoia Agent, but the end of it is like we're zooming directly into the same thing.
Yeah.
Like.
Like, I also love Paranoia Agent, but I was like, oh, this makes me so sad.
Yeah, well, because, like, by the end of it, like, it ends in the same way. Like, it becomes sort of cyclical, which I think is interesting. But.
Yeah, I think, well, a lot of his movies have a similar end to it also, where there's like, some big, like, informational reveal. I mean, obviously, that's, like, a common movie trope anyway, but with Perfect Blue especially, the fact that it has the same merging of dreams and reality, but it involves a pop star, where she
yeah,
ends up, like, she is a stalker, she ends up getting followed around or harassed by this person, and she's starting to lose her sense of self after going from being a pop idol to trying to become a TV
like
actress.
A serious actress.
Yeah, like, I think she's put on a soap or something, but...
Yeah, it kind of seems like a weird, like, Law and Order-esque soap.
Kind of, yeah. But...
That's another discussion.
Yeah, well, we'll review that one later.
Yeah, but...
Yeah.
Definitely the
that tasty
possibility.
Pod. Yeah.
That tasty pod.
That tasty pod.
That tasty.
I said pod.
Oh, well.
But, yeah, so there's a few other references to, like Blade Runner and Silence of the Lambs.
What was the Silence of the Lambs one?
I remember the part where she's pinned down as the
butterfly yeah,
thing.
No,
like,
no,
oh, there's so much butterfly and moth imagery in Silence of the Lambs, but it's for kind of a... Well, for something of a similar thing, but in Silence of the Lambs, it's all about transformation. And,
right,
yeah,
obviously.
With the character of Buffalo Bill and, I think, maybe to a lesser extent, Hannibal Lecter. Well, in the
but,
sense of, like, where he has this veneer of being, like, a very hyper-intelligent,
Yeah, like intellectual.
Yeah, intellectual, but,
also but
he's also a psychopath.
Yeah.
So it's pretty good. I mean, it still holds up.
Go back to it.
I will admit that I've ended up watching the Puts the Lotion on Its Skin a little bit too much. Just, I don't know why.
Have
like,
I ever showed you that song?
Well, no, oh yeah, the one by
Greenskeepers.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think I saw that in college.
Oh.
Yeah. Before I transfer colleges.
I love
so
that
good.
Song so much.
Put the lotion in the basket.
Put the lotion in the basket.
Oh. You should just look up the Greenskeepers.
Lotion. So
it's,
good.
It's
I mean, it's obviously creepy, but
it's
so good.
It's disconcerting, but it's just fun. It's just a fun little corner of the internet.
Yep. Yeah, but so yeah, definitely. There's a lot of good references in it. Like one of our favorites was Paprika as Sun Wukong or.
Mm-hmm.
In Japan is often known as Son Goku, which is absolutely the reference that Akira Toriyama was going for with Goku.
Oh, really?
Yes, that's that's absolutely what he was referencing. That's
I thought
you
were
going to
talk
Son
about
Goku.
The Monkey King.
That is the character.
Oh, okay.
In China, the character is Son Wukong, the Monkey King, and in Japan it's called Son Goku.
Oh, okay.
But it's the same character.
It all makes sense now.
Yeah.
To like, we would go a little
there's
bit more into the story,
there's...
but it's so confusing that if we started describing it, you'd be like, wait, what?
It
would be like us trying to recount what happened in a car accident.
Right, yeah.
Where, in the sense of it's so chaotic and so, like, you're just trying to keep a semblance of what exactly happened.
Right,
that
so...
us describing it will just make you more confused.
Yeah, yeah. And it's important that such a visual, it's obviously it's a visual medium, but it can only be viewed in that way, right?
Like, yeah, we're like, you need the visuals to understand what's kind of going on.
Yeah, yeah.
Which I think is crazy because this was originally released as a book.
Yeah,
back in
so
the early
I'm
90s.
Sort of interested in that book.
Yeah, I may actually look into it now too because it sounds pretty cool.
But yeah, so it's a good movie and we'd like to do more depth description of the plot, but it would not be.
It's like for something like this. It's like it's not like with say Cats Don't Dance or with The Last Unicorn. It's
fairly
linear.
Fairly straightforward.
They're very linear. This one is linear, but it's also very.
Well,
weird.
Yeah, like we said, there's just constant jumping between dreams and reality,
yeah.
And the slow melding or
and the issue with going into the story for that is that it's just it happens so frequently. And so constantly that, you have to be watching it to kind
of
try to understand.
Yeah.
Because even then you don't really get it.
Yeah, well, it's a lot of, match cuts. So,
yeah.
Suddenly you're in this scene, which I love. It's
yeah, which
favorite,
is great. But it's
film.
Yeah, but as it should be, it's a visual medium in film, which is why you should just watch it.
Yeah, yeah. And it is a beautiful movie.
Yeah, at the very least, just go in for some of the dream sequences and some of the fight scenes.
Yeah.
They're amazing. It's just it's astonishing, and it's really sad that this is the last movie that he ever got to do before he died.
Yeah,
he made a short in 2008, but which is still good, but you can't really it's
yeah.
you should just check.
Well,
it out.
So the studio Madhouse that made the movie,
yeah.
And I think worked with them on other movies as well, didn't they?
Yeah, they did. They did.
Yeah.
I know for a fact that they produced Paranoia Agent.
Oh,
there you go. I think they may have been with them from the get go.
That may be the case.
Let me check.
But so I know I was literally just reading a thing where I don't know if he's the director, but one of the guys, one of the guys at Madhouse is like, yeah, I want to finish this movie. Because they have, I think at the time he died, they had finished about half, just under half of the shots they needed.
What, for the...
For the movie that he was working on when he died.
Oh, yes, that's true.
So hopefully in the next, decade.
Which would be great. I really hope that, I really hope that they end up finishing that one. It'll probably feel a little bit weird in the sense that we will know that he's been gone for a while.
Yeah.
But we can see, as long as there's not, like, a clear divide of, like, where things were before he passed away and then afterwards.
Yeah, right. Because
like I've seen movies like that, like...
The Imaginary of Dr. Parnassus,
yes,
whatever.
Yes, that one. Which I still liked, but there's a very clear divide in between it. And also, to a lesser extent, Brave. Which,
really?
Like... Oh, yeah, I mean, like, you can tell the whole atmosphere of, like, once the mother changes into a bear, they had to change directors. Like, it was, like...
Really?
Yeah, which is weird. Like, right after she meets up with the witch and gets the cake and everything, they ended up having a issue with their with the director that they originally had on the film. So they brought in another one, which is why there seems to be a very strange, I guess, like, divide in tone from where the original movie was, wherein, like, if you watch the first, like, 30-some-odd minutes of Brave, it's like, okay, this is clearly going for what Brave usually does. But then, in my opinion, I think it gets a little bit more kid-friendly, and I can kind of tell that that may have had something to do with the director.
Huh.
Yeah. I mean, like, it's interesting. Like, if going into the story itself, it's, or, like, the actual behind-the-scenes thing about Brave, it's like,
mm-hmm.
As soon as I, granted, I had read that before I went to go see the movie, so I kind of ruined it for myself. And I was just like, I was just sitting there like the pouting movie goer. It's like, when does it start getting weird? But like at the same time, I was like, oh, there we go. So,
huh.
I don't know. Like that's just something I kind of noticed, I guess.
Yeah.
But yeah, there have been other films that have had similar directing.
Yeah, it's been directing
issues.
Also.
But those are the only two I can think of.
Yeah.
Yeah, I still like the Imaginarium of Dr. Parnassus though.
I've not seen it.
Oh, really? Oh. It's very Terrigilliam. Very Terrigilliam. Terrigilliam. I like saying his name. But yeah, it's I don't know, it's hard to, again, like it's hard to just kind of describe it. You should just, if nothing else, just go in to appreciate the visuals.
Yeah.
And
it's absolutely nothing else. But it is, I mean, it is a good movie too. Like, I mean, I like things that
plus, you can pick out all the stuff that Inception ended up referring to.
Yeah, absolutely. There are many very, like, absolutely direct visual references.
Mm-hmm. I don't even know how they were able to, like... So you can just buy the rights to use it.
You know, I'm not entirely sure how it works.
I didn't know that was a
thing,
because at least if someone tried to do that with Disney, they would get the pantsuit off of them.
Right,
so.
Well, Disney is massive, multinational... And literally invented copyright in America.
Yeah, that's true. Well, no, they didn't invent copyright. They perfected it
to work
for them.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's like, that's why now entrepreneurs now get the lifetime of the creator plus 70 years. I think, yeah, it's, it may even be more. I don't know.
Yeah, so I don't know if it's like,
copyright law is very comprehensive and very strange.
Yeah. Well,
reading about it is interesting, but it also makes my head hurt.
Yeah, well, it's so interesting to think about, like, the way that, or to me it's interesting because I'm a nerd, but, like, you know, like, copyright and plagiarizing didn't really exist, like, God, in, like, Shakespeare's time and things like that.
Well, I thought it was
where,
kind of,
like,
it was openly
constant,
expected
yeah.
that people
yeah,
would be
exactly,
ripping off
like,
of each other.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you're pretty much ripping off, like, oh, this was clearly inspired by this guy. Oh,
or, like, if nothing else, you would get more flack for complaining about it, but now since there's so much money to be had, or there's so much intellectual property that gets traded around, like, if you go on Tumblr, if you go on Pinterest, anything, everything that's considered fan art, if they're making money off of it, can be considered a copyright violation.
Yeah,
I mean, it might just be doing the imagery. I mean, like, how many places have you, like, gone to a mall where they have pictures of, like, Mickey and Minnie and try to screen print them on t-shirts or something? Or it's they realistically can't do that, but it's so hard to control unless it's being put onto, like, a public forum or free enterprise website.
Right, exactly.
So
kind of interesting in that way.
Yeah.
I don't quite know how it works, but I know, like, for example, like, Disney definitely has the distribution rights for Studio Ghibli's movies
under lock and key.
So I don't know if that's
maybe even more cutthroat about it than George Lucas with releasing the original Star. Yeah, I know. Which is I really hope that that is a thing. No, like now that Disney owns Star Wars, I really hope that they re-release Star Wars as the original three, like not the edits that he put on them back in the 90s.
Oh, they
because they were toying with that for a while.
No, I actually think they got released already.
Oh, did they really? Oh,
yeah,
good.
So a couple... I know, because I eventually just bought them all.
Yeah.
Pardon me. They released, like, all six in like a set.
Oh, well, can we take the other three out?
Yeah. Well, all right. It's a whole other discussion to be had, but so the discs are like two sided, and one side is like the original cut, and the other side is like a whatever he did in the 90s.
Oh,
yeah. So
interesting.
I mean,
actually, that's kind of cool, and the fact that I haven't actually seen someone make a double sided DVD since like 2000 whatever. Do you remember when that was a thing where like there was?
Yeah, I hate it.
Dude, do you remember?
Still have those.
Do you remember Divx or whatever it was? Like that thing of like where you buy a DVD or and then you can only watch it a couple of times and then it stops working.
Oh, like the no.
Like I had one for Dr. Dolittle and I was so confused because like we it would try to watch it again later. No, like, it would just stop working. Like what it was like heck? it was so dumb. I wish I still had it because I don't remember what the actual process for like watching it or why we bought it, but I think we just assumed that it was a regular DVD. But this is right when they were starting to get all the formats figured out. This is before the great Blu-ray, the great Blu-ray HD DVD war happened for a while, and then Blu-ray just ended up completely trouncing them.
Yeah, which is kind of weird.
Still have some old HD DVDs. One of The Last Samurai for some reason. I know.
No, but I remember that. I remember that being sort of a thing they talked about. Because when I worked at Suncoast, they were talking about like someone I think I worked with expected that there would be this thing where you could essentially rent like a movie that was out in theaters.
A
disc. But then it was basically you watched it once.
So is that any different from like just buying like a burner from someone that recorded it at a theater? I don't know.
It is different. Because the burner would still exist.
Oh, man.
It would basically be like a
would
disc.
Would someone actually do that?
I don't know, man. Probably
or is
not.
Is that just streaming?
I mean, now with streaming and digital content, it's a much different world. Like, the whole landscape of how we absorb media is different.
What was those movies on theaters?
Oh, man. What was the last movie I saw in theaters?
Mine was probably Song of the Sea, actually. Or was it?
Have you seen anything since then?
Oh, I don't think I have.
Yeah,
oh
right?
My God.
Like,
it's almost been like a month and a half.
And it's been longer than that for me.
Yeah. Well,
Into the Woods. Into the Woods was the last time I saw.
Oh, that's right. When was that?
January.
Yeah.
Maybe late December.
Dang. Okay. Thank
we you. Have gone way.
Yeah, way off the rails.
Jump way off the rails. Well, that's fine.
It's okay.
It was going to happen. It's going to happen.
It's going to show itself.
It's going to happen.
But yeah, it's I would just like just approach it with the same seriousness that you would for any other like thriller movie because I don't really like when people say like, oh, it's animated, it must be for kids. This is absolutely not
no,
for children.
No, absolutely not.
Kids
absolutely
will not only
not
understand it, they will be terrified by it.
Yeah.
And they may it may be
like,
just,
congratulations.
It may just blow their mind to the point of them just being comatose.
You've like, given your child a lifelong fear of all dolls.
Yeah.
Which they should
yeah.
have.
Which they should
dolls
have anyway.
Are evil.
I had such a big fear of dolls when I was growing up. But it was also right when Chucky was big, like the Child's
yeah.
Play movies.
Yeah, we're not
and
talking
like,
about like Barbies and things.
No,
we're talking
we need
about,
like
actual,
porcelain,
like, creepy...
weird, proportionate dolls. And it's like, I don't trust dolls.
They're evil.
Yeah, they're not human. And I don't trust them.
They're not human, not a lot.
And I don't trust animals either, no. No, it's just, if you don't have a phobia of dolls before this, you will by the time the movie ends.
You will.
It's
the next time
like,
you walk into a doll store,
it's
you walk
like,
past an antique mall, you'll get uncomfortable.
It's sort of like what Stephen King's It did for clowns, where if you didn't already have a fear of clowns, that would do it for you.
Many
in retrospect, the movie is very campy, but clowns are still terrifying.
Yeah.
Coincidence? I don't think so.
Probably not.
Yep. I just don't trust him.
Yeah.
Squeaky shoes. Just get better shoes. Look at your nose. You been drinking? What?
Been drinking? Drinky the clown?
You been boozing? You been boozing to forget your life at the circus? Anyway.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think that's about it. Like, it ends with a fairly happy-ish ending, I guess.
No, I absolutely agree it's a positive ending. I mean, like, because a lot of the all the characters kind of resolve some of their issues.
Mm-hmm.
True to form of the DC mini, kind of therapeutic.
Yeah.
But
I think eventually they're like, you know what? I don't think man can handle this right now.
No, yeah, absolutely.
Like,
absolutely.
It's the point
like,
where it's
you know
like,
what?
You know what? We probably just shouldn't.
We're just gonna not, because that guy.
He's
definitely not the only one who has that thought.
But at the very least, they now know what they're capable of, and now they can think of another way to maybe reframe the same technology to help more people.
Yeah, maybe. Then,
yeah.
But also, I mean, that's also like. The thing about the DC mini in the movie is it's unfinished, like, because it's unfinished, right? Like, it's still, like, a late prototype.
Yeah, it's like a beta, basically.
Yeah.
Or alpha, maybe.
No, definitely a beta.
Yeah.
Because an alpha, like, when you're looking at an alpha, it's almost like a whole different thing.
Oh, often. That's true. Yeah.
But yeah, the reason everything was, I think one of the reasons everything was able to go crazy is because, like, there were no restrictions placed on the DC minis yet.
Yes.
So, but yeah, I definitely think after that movie, the characters were like, you know what? We're gonna not. So Keaton was like, you know what? This is okay.
But at the very least, they got to see what they could do. Which is always nice. I mean, they go through a change. They're like, you know what? Let's just abandon this. Let's go do something else. We're going to go to that same creepy theme park that was from earlier in the movie.
Oh, man.
That had what appeared to be a golden Astro Boy. I didn't quite get it. Was that an actual character? I don't feel like it was.
What?
The guy that looked like a golden Astro Boy. I assume that they were. No, do you remember when they go to that one theme park to try to track down some of the clues about Himuro's death?
Yes.
Yeah. Where there's like this there's like what looks like a golden version of Astro Boy on the back of Tokita's shirt, which is where they figure out.
Oh yeah, yeah. It was like a big golden robot.
Yeah, I assume that was just a reference to that.
Maybe.
I don't know. I mean, that's the robot
that he that he ends up like being absorbed into in the dream, I guess.
Yeah, but like the look of it appears more like to me, it looked like Astro Boy.
I think on the shirt it did, but then like when you see him in the robot, like it's a. It's like just a toy robot, like a more generic toy robot.
No, I think
robot.
He was just kind of a totally different robot. I don't know. Oh, because he had like
he had a big
head.
Square of head.
Yeah, he reminded me more of that character from Fooly Cooly, like with Conti with the big TV head. Yeah. But yeah, this is another movie where there's so much trippy imagery you don't have to worry about having any drugs taken beforehand. any foreign substances, you don't have to worry about that.
No, I would say you worry about it. Don't do them before you watch the movie.
Yeah, for goodness sake,
please, good day
for
you.
Please don't imbibe anything that should not be in your body before you watch this. It's you don't need it.
Yeah,
you don't need
I feel
it.
Like
it's
you
like,
would...
if you could get this at the library, it's a free night entertainment for you.
Yeah, I feel like if you were on something like, especially like a psychedelic, you would have a bad trip.
Yeah, it's just like I.
Because some of the imagery, so it's good, but like, say it's very intense. Like some of the imagery is very intense.
And if you watch it at a state where you're not completely at your best, I would really worry about the longer term effects of it.
Yeah, I feel like
some of this stuff, like seeing it completely just on nothing, it's still very disturbing.
Yeah,
but it's not super bloody or anything. It's just like a lot of it's very uncomfortable.
No, yeah, so, yeah. Well, I think. Yeah, Satoshi Kon does that well in the way he does, like, deaths and things.
Mm-hmm.
Like there's one scene where we see, like, two of the doctors have been sort of, I don't know, possessed, for lack of a better term, but...
Yeah,
there's,
possessed
like,
is probably a good term.
And they're going around, you know, saying weird stuff. And then later we see them, and there's blood. Like, there's a lot of blood, and they have blood on them. And there's, like, a broken, bloody broom, and they're being wheeled away.
Wait, like, but they didn't actually show how it happened.
No, yeah, we
but
have no idea.
But
like,
there's implied violence, and it's enough to make you a little uneasy.
Yeah, we get A and C. We have no idea what B is.
Yeah, well,
I love.
Yeah, which I love, but it also, if you have a vivid imagination, you could think of a lot of things of what
well,
could exactly, happen.
Yeah,
so,
and I think that's...
Which
I
is
think
like,
that's,
oh.
Well, but I mean, that's Satoshi Kon.
Yeah.
He definitely leaves some things up to your imagination, because the truth is, in many cases, nothing that I could put onto paper would be as scary as the thing that your mind can come up with.
This is true.
So.
Yeah, this episode got sad.
A little dark.
Yeah.
What's good out there?
At the very least, I would say, like, it's definitely a movie you should see, if for nothing else, like, for the artistic merit, and just because it's a fun movie. It really keeps your attention.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, it makes you think.
Yeah, no,
it
does.
Yeah. Which I always love in a movie. I can't go to, like, a shoot 'em up or Michael Bay movie or something and just be like, oh, that was great. Like, you
know. It takes a very specific state for me to walk into a movie that I know is just going to be devoid intellectually. that I just, you know, like a popcorn flick.
Yeah, have you ever, like, tried, like, you go into a movie just to try to rationalize it to yourself? It's like, I know that this has the potential to not be that good, I'm gonna go anyway. But then you hate yourself afterwards for being right?
Probably.
Okay.
I was gonna say Fast and Furious 6, but I actually liked that movie.
I did too.
I didn't pay enough attention to the whole movie, but like the whole thing, it was just so much fun.
There's so much going on, and it's like, okay.
Yeah, it's kind of like
and
sit back.
I also like hearing Vin Diesel say "family," and I like watching Instagram videos of The Rock working out because that's all his Instagram is, which is it's just so great. And he's always covered in baby oil for no reason. Like, picking up the paper. Time to cover myself in baby oil.
Gotta make sure I'm glistening.
Yep. As soon as I wave, I don't want to smack anyone in the face with all this baby oil on me. But, so we both had a pretty late night. But
yeah, I'm a little tired. But,
I wanted to see if we could try to get this one back on track, because since we had such a delay from last week.
Yeah, we'd rather get ourselves back into the swing of things, maybe.
Yep. So, and plus, this upcoming weekend is going to be crazy for us anyway, so I think, No, because you haven't bought your ticket yet, have you?
No.
We're going to C2E2.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, if that's a thing you're at.
Yeah. If that's a thing you're at, we will be there, too.
Yeah.
I will be dressed as Pearl from Steven Universe. I made most of my staff, or my spear, sorry, yesterday. Mm-hmm. Need to finish painting it today, and Robbie's going to be going as Steven. So, we have to spray his hair and get his... Get him a shirt or something figured out. But, yeah, it should be a lot of fun. If you're going to be there, you can send us tweets, and then we can come find you if you want to hang out. Yeah, you can find us on Twitter. I'm at TC Trausch. That's T as in Tom, C as in cat, T as in Tom again, R as in rabbit, A as in apple.
You.
Okay. U as in unicorn. S as in Sam, C as in cat, H as in house, T as in Tom. So, I'll be, we'll be there dressed up. We're only going to be there on Saturday.
Yeah.
I don't know when, but I need to look at the, panel list, because that's, I mostly go there for panels and for the dealer's room and stuff. If there's some artists there, I would like to talk with them, too, but I don't know. I haven't looked just yet.
Yeah, I should see if
are you just going on Saturday?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, yeah, I never really go on Sunday. Well, it's the day that kids go.
Yeah.
So. Which is a shame, because I was going to wear two costumes, but I didn't have enough time to finish my other one.
Yeah, no.
Which is, I wanted to go as Mary and Pataki from Hair and All. I may still do it at some point, but my hair is not long enough for it just yet, or I just have to get a wig. So.
Yeah.
But I would love to go as Mary.
But yeah, so we'll be at that, we'll get this episode, we'll hopefully be able to get another episode out on time next week.
Mm-hmm. Tell me your Twitter.
Oh, yeah, my Twitter handle is Lobster Writer. That's Lobster_Writer. Very simple.
So, but yeah, again, if you guys have any requests or anything, we don't really know how many of you would listen to it all the way through at this point.
Yeah.
But if you listen, you just listen
the whole thing.
Yeah, you're just like sitting there, it's like, whatever, I need to kill an hour.
That was dumb. But yeah, absolutely, check out anything by Satoshi Kon.
Yeah.
And,
Paranoia Agent especially. Great series.
Yes.
That's where we both kind of found out about him anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Adult Swim, man. They hook you up with good shows. But, yep. So I guess that's it for this one.
Yeah, I think this, we're good to cut it there. I don't want to... We were to really delve into, like, some of the psychological things we could talk all day. But yeah, we'll,
When you watch it, it becomes immediately apparent, where it's like, you kind of know what they're getting at.
Yeah.
So, it's good times. We think you'll enjoy it.
Yeah. So, I think that'll be it for us. Yeah.
Thanks, guys. Don't do drugs. Make your choices.
Thanks.
Bye. Yo, I'm singing, you get hungry. Yo, I'm singing, you get hungry.